Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It's finally here. I'm at the finish line when it comes to moving out of California and into Texas. This is the last day, not the last day in our home. It's the last day in our home as owners. For the next few days, we're going to be renters. It's bittersweet, but I'm looking forward to the transition. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. On today's show, we're going to talk about Jesus mythicism. So I'm going to continue the discussion I had with Mr. Cy Kellett on Catholic Answers Live earlier in the week. This is still Jesus Week on Catholic Answers Live. I talked about mythicism on the show, but there's so much more I could have gone into in detail, which is why it's great we have the podcast to do that. And it's great we have your support to make the podcast possible. If you go to TrenthornPodcast.com, you can become a premium subscriber. Lots of things you can do there. One thing I do there is I love to get feedback directly from my patrons. So I actually did a poll to ask people, because there have been discussions, preliminary discussions here at the Catholic Answers office about turning the Council of Trent podcast into a radio show. I've talked about that maybe a year or two ago, and I'm praying, I'm discerning about it. You might say, I have a thought about you, Trent. You should do it. Or you may have the thought, Trent, you should just stick to doing the podcast. I love the podcast. Don't change it. And I have my own thoughts about that. But it was really cool. Yesterday, I was able to do a poll and engage with the patrons on this very question. And I will release a video message to them probably today or tomorrow with my thoughts on the question to let them know before I clue you in all more on my thoughts on the matter. But if you want to be part of those polls, that behind-the-scenes stuff, commenting on episodes, submitting questions for open mailbag episodes, which will be coming up here soon, then please go to TrenthornPodcast.com. Another great way you can help the podcast, though, is by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play. That's always really helpful. But before we get into the topic today of the show of Jesus mythicism, I do want to fill you in a bit on some family matters. Not the TV show with, you know, Carl Winslow, Steve Urkel. You remember Family Matters, TGIF, ABC lineup on Fridays, Boy Meets World, Family Matters, Step by Step, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I should do a whole free-for-all Friday just on that. No, about our Family Matters. So here's what's going on. Today is our closing day. As I'm recording this to you now here on the 19th, and then we'll post later today, we closed, and I'm signing all the paperwork. I feel like I've signed like 8,000 forms. I've done my best to read all of them, but the legalese can get somewhat overwhelming. So I signed the paperwork today. This is our last day as owners of our home here in California. Over the next few days, we're going to be renters. We agreed to a rent back or a rent buyback so we could have a little bit of extra time when it came to packing and moving. So now over the next weekend, we're just going to pack everything up and then we're putting it all in a pod. We're putting it in those giant pods because I did not want to drive a moving truck all the way to Fort Worth, Texas. So that's going to be going on this weekend. And then we're going to be kind of vagrants. We're going to be travelers, if you will, staying at different homes during the two-week period we have until we close on our other home in Texas. So it's bittersweet. I told everyone here in the office, we had our big staff meeting. Nearly all the staff knew that I was relocating, but I gave, you know, the official declaration, if you will, that this would be my last week here in the office. And I told them the thing I'm going to miss the most, I'm really going to miss being here in the office and seeing everyone. And I said, I just wish the angels would come and pick up the Catholic Answers office and drop it off in Fort Worth, Texas, and pick up everybody's houses and put them over there. And maybe that will. That's a hope that we have, that this secondary remote office we're in discussions about opening up, that other Catholic Answers staff will transfer out there. But everybody's going out there. If you saw on the internet a few days ago, Jackie and Bobby Angel were friends of mine. Bobby teaches at a Catholic high school. Jackie is a speaker. She's a praise and worship leader. She has several albums that she's released. We've spoken at a lot of events together. Jackie and I actually, we used to do pro-life events a long time ago. So probably last time we did a pro-life event together, it was probably like 13 years ago. And they called me a month ago when they heard that I was moving to Texas. Someone told them Trent Horn's going to Texas. And they called me to say, hey, Word on Fire has hired us to be new fellows with them. And we're moving to Dallas, Texas, too. So everybody's going, and I'm super jazzed about that. And so stay tuned for dispatches from that exciting update, you know, chapter in our lives. All that and more coming soon. But let's stick to the topic of today's show, Jesus mythicism. Who thinks that Jesus doesn't exist? Well, I'll tell you who doesn't think that. So Bart Ehrman, who is very skeptical of Christianity, he wrote a book called Misquoting Jesus. He wrote a book, How Jesus Became God. Not that Jesus really is God, but how people started to believe he was God, even though he's just a man, which prompted several Christians like Craig Evans and others to get together, and Michael Bird, who's a great Pauline scholar, to write a book called How God Became Jesus as a response to Bart Ehrman. But even Ehrman, who is very critical of Christianity, is also very critical of mythicism. He says that scholars almost uniformly reject this view. In his 2012 book, Did Jesus Exist? At the very beginning of the book, on page 4, he says, virtually every expert on the planet holds the view that Jesus existed. It's something that is not really well known even among academic scholars, but it's very, very popular on the internet. If you know someone, you have an atheist friend or relative, especially someone who dabbles in internet atheism. I remember once, probably 10 years ago, I was giving a talk on atheism at a university, and a group of atheist students from the local atheist club came and spoke with me, and we had a chat after my talk. And I asked them, well, what book on atheism has influenced you the most? Or what books have you guys read on atheism? And they said, oh, we don't really read books on atheism. I watch this YouTuber. I watch Matt Dillahunty. I watch the Amazing Atheist. And so there's a generation of atheists. Most of them have been formed by really by videos on YouTube who don't read a lot of atheist literature, which is unfortunate because they only absorb very shallow arguments against Christianity. That's why I'd recommend go back to the episode I did a few weeks ago. It was on surprisingly enjoyable atheists on Twitter. I did it just a few weeks ago. It was my interview with Ben Watkins of the Real Atheology channel. And these guys are doing a great job of rooting out internet atheism, village atheism, a kind of anti-intellectual atheism that gravitates towards shallow arguments with heated rhetoric, and Real Atheology wants to raise the level of the dialogue. And I think one thing they would like to raise, if we're talking about the person of Jesus, let's use the best scholarship that scholars agree upon when it comes to the person of Jesus Christ. And scholars almost uniformly reject the view that Jesus did not exist. It's only held by a handful of people. I could probably count them on one hand who have the relevant academic degrees to talk about this, and none of them teaches full-time at a major university. In fact, I would say Jesus mythicism is really wedded to a kind of internet atheism or atheism apologetics for atheism. It's funny, a lot of atheists will refer to people like me as an apologist instead of a Christian apologist or a Catholic apologist, and forget, hey, if you're defending atheism, if you're out there making videos and making arguments for atheism and against Christianity, you're an apologist for atheism. So you go back through the history of mythicism, it really starts that way. In fact, before the French Revolution, you can't find anyone defending the view that Jesus never existed. I mean, in the Talmud, which is a collection of ancient Jewish rabbinical writings, you'll see people saying that Jesus was a sorcerer, a charlatan. You see similar charges in ancient Greek critics like Celsus, for example. There was a work called The Passing of Peregrinus written by Lucian of Samosata. And he was a second century Greek playwright. He was very critical of Christianity, and he criticized Christians for worshiping a crucified sophist. So a sophist is someone who engages in sophistry. So sophistry is like using word games or tricks, not using a valid argument, but twisting words in order to get what you want, sophistry. And so Lucian of Samosata in the second century called Jesus a crucified sophist. So in the ancient world, those who did not believe in Jesus didn't say that he did not exist. They said, well, sure, he existed, but the Jews would say he wasn't the Messiah. He was fraudulent. Greeks would say that he was also fraudulent, or he was just a wise teacher, but he wasn't God. So you go through history. It wasn't until the French Revolution that you get people arguing that all religions are the same and they come from the same primeval myths, and Jesus is included. That was the origin of the pagan copycat thesis, the idea that, well, these ancient pagans, they worshipped dying and rising gods, that when the crops die out, when the trees die in the winter, that's when God dies, and when the trees and the flowers come back in the spring, that is when God rises again. And so the idea is that ancient pagans believed in a cyclical vegetative resurrection cycle as a part of a mythology of their gods. Hey, look, Christians believe that Jesus died and rose again. It must be the same thing. Except even in the 19th century, in the early 20th century, this view was absolutely savaged by biblical scholars, including more liberal biblical scholars who denied things like that Jesus Christ was born of a virgin, for example. You had a lot of that in the early 20th century in liberal Protestant scholarship. And you have some of that today, even among Catholic scholars who are moderate slash liberal, people like John Meyer, the author of the 4-volume series, Jesus, a Marginal Jew. Now, Meyer has a lot of great stuff in there. It's just not great when Meyer says, oh, when it comes to Mary being a virgin her entire life, there is no evidence for that whatsoever, but I'm going to believe it because the Pope says so. I mean, if you took Meyer's view, I think that's basically where he comes down on. Or the same, someone like Raymond Brown, who does have some good biblical scholarship, but then he talks about in his book, The Birth of the Messiah, how a lot of the details in the Gospels of Jesus' birth are unhistorical or ahistorical. We can only take them on faith. But even among these liberal scholars going into the early 20th century, they all agree that there was a historical Jesus, and that this view that Jesus was merely a pagan copycat doesn't work because Jesus was Jewish. His followers are Jewish. They were anathema to anything that was pagan to accept. In Jerusalem, for example, Pontius Pilate, you remember, think about it in the Gospels, Pontius Pilate does not want to start a riot. He doesn't want people to get out of hand. He does everything he can to get out of the situation he's in, because he had already gotten in trouble with the emperor and with other Roman authorities for riots that had happened in Jerusalem. One of them was called the Golden Shields incident. This is recorded in the Jewish historian Philo. I don't even think Josephus mentions this, which shows that ancient historians don't always record everything, which will be important as we discuss here later about why more ancient historians don't record Jesus. But Philo says that the Roman authorities, Pilate installed these golden shields in Jerusalem that contained inscriptions to the emperor declaring the emperor to be God. And the Jewish authorities rebelled at this. They called it blasphemy. We don't want these objects installed in our city praising the emperor as God, and demanded that they be taken down. And then they rioted and wrecked a bunch of stuff in the city. So Pilate is always dealing with that. And then after Jesus, at the end of his reign, Pilate ended up getting kicked out of his leadership role anyways, because he couldn't control the people. He couldn't maintain civil and peaceful government. So the point I bring up with that story is that if the Jewish people at that time rebelled against golden shields with inscriptions to the emperor on them as a god, these Jewish followers of Jesus are not going to say, hey, remember that story that those pagans tell about their dying and rising gods? Let's say that Jesus of Nazareth, this rabbi we've been following, he's just like them. Or if you hold to the mythicist view, we just believe in a Jesus who is out there who we've never met before in our lives. So this view was absolutely savaged in the early 20th century. And there were only a few atheistic scholars at the beginning of the 20th century who held to it, mostly among the German form critics. But even among them, they still believed Jesus existed. They were just skeptical of all the other stuff. These are people like Bruno Bauer, Arthur Drews, Remsburg. The early 20th century, they put these views out there, but they disappeared into the ether. You know, no one really took them seriously. They didn't get rediscovered again until the 1970s by a professor of German, a guy named G.A. Wells, George Albert Wells. And so he was a German professor and a German scholar, and he unearthed this German mythicist scholarship and reintroduced it to the English-speaking world. So he's written like a dozen, G.A. Wells has written like a dozen books on Jesus not existing. And when you read reviews of Wells, it's funny. One of my favorite reviews of G.A. Wells is this. When you've read one G.A. Wells book, you've read them all. That is the same tired argument over and over again. And what's fascinating, in 2009, Wells changed his position and said, yes, there was a Jesus who existed. We have just a bare, minimal amount of evidence about this Galilean peasant. So even Wells, who introduced this to the English-speaking world, he abandoned it. Now, the people who ended up carrying the mantle after him were Earl Doherty, who wrote the book Neither God Nor Man, and Robert Price and Richard Carrier. Richard Carrier is probably one of the most well-known people on the internet, and he's one of the few people who has a relevant degree in the field. He has a PhD in ancient history. I debated him about 6 years ago on this very subject, so that's what encouraged me to do all of the reading involved. Carrier is a smart guy. He, when you read his books, it's full of footnotes and research and citations, and it can be overwhelming. But when you go through it methodically, one footnote at a time, you start to see the case begin to collapse. And that's what I put forward in my debate and what I've done in my written work after that, and what other scholars have done who've addressed Carrier on these points, including Bart Ehrman. Though those who address Carrier directly, he's not the most pleasant individual to interact with on the internet, I'll say the least. But he has a significant following. I'm going to read you an article from abc.net.au. This is the Australian affiliate of ABC News. It's called "I'll Eat a Page from My Bible If Jesus Didn't Exist." It's by John Dixon, who is a professor of history at the University of Sydney. And he's writing in response to atheists on campus who are promoting the view Jesus did not exist. And I'm sure one of them was Raphael Lataster. Several years ago, I debated Lataster at the University of Sydney on the question, does God exist? And he was a PhD student. He just finished his PhD thesis, and I get quoted in it a few times, actually. I plan to respond to it at some point in the future. But he wrote another book saying that Jesus did not exist, which was mostly reflecting upon Richard Carrier's arguments. So this is what Dixon says about that. He says, the inspiration for their piece is a publication of Richard Carrier's book on the historicity of Jesus. Carrier is well known to atheist apologists and Christian apologists alike. The two groups are often the mirror image of each other. So Dixon is more in the middle, you know, kind of a moderate scholar on the issue, but he's adamant there was a man named Jesus. Carrier's the man who earned a PhD from a good ancient history department. He went to Columbia and has since devoted himself to debating evangelical Christians and a few Catholics here or there, myself included. Carrier's thesis is that Jesus started out as a celestial figure of religious visions, only to be dressed up in historical garb by the later gospel writers, after which people began to believe he was a real person. So that's the best mythicist thesis, the one Carrier defends, which Doherty had defended 20 or 30 years before him, is the view that Jesus was thought of as this kind of angelic savior figure that people worshipped in these hallucinatory visions. And then the later gospel writers, like Mark, wrote a parable about Jesus living in Nazareth and Jerusalem that wasn't meant to be taken literally, but then later Christians did take it literally when they weren't supposed to and believed in a Jesus who did exist. So Dixon goes on to say, he says, this too would be a first. Scholars are used to the myths of, say, Romulus and Remus, the founders of Rome. Their legends first appear around 300 BC, 300 or 400 years after the actual founding of the city. Carrier is asking us to think that a similar process of the historicization of myth happened to Jesus. But he wants us to believe that it took in about a tenth of the time. Within a single generation, Christians are meant to have transformed their heavenly Lord into a Galilean Jewish peasant who, according to virtually all specialists today, fits remarkably well with what we know of the customs, beliefs, and aspirations of Galilean peasantry. So the idea here is, and you see this in the work of the classic scholar A.N. Sherwin White, who says it takes multiple generations for legend to creep in and overtake the historical core of a story in a historical narrative. So what Dixon is saying is that, yeah, you're going to get historical myths of people who never existed, like Romulus and Remus did not found the city of Rome. But the stories about them, where they mythologically did do that, those were told hundreds of years later. The other myths that arise for other historical figures, that takes place, you know, the first stories about Buddha were written 400 years later, the same with Alexander the Great. There may have been a King Arthur, he might have been a mythical figure, but the first stories we have there, historical accounts, are written centuries later. And Dixon takes umbrage at Carrier's argument, saying the Gospels were written within the lifetime of the followers of Jesus Christ, if he actually existed. So you have a too short of a timetable to go from the first followers believe in a purely mythical Jesus to then you have, like, St. Ignatius of Antioch at the beginning of the second century saying very clearly Jesus was born of a woman, born of the Virgin Mary, that he was crucified. He really did exist, and that he's adamant about that. And one of my arguments against the view that Jesus did not exist is that Christian heresies they're like zombies. You kill them, they come back to life later. I've actually thought about for a long time writing a book called Zombie Heresies, because the same heresies pop up in church history over and over and over again. And that's what it would be the case, that if the very first Christians, if Peter, Paul, just had hallucinatory visions of a Jesus in heaven, and that's the Jesus they believed in, not a Jesus who really existed. And then later Christians, a later sect of Christians, believed in an earthly historical Jesus. What you would have is you would have infighting between the mythicist, the original mythicist Christians, and the later historicist Christians who didn't get what the very first revelation was all about. You'd have this infighting. Each group would call each other a heretic. But guess what? You don't see anything like that. As I said before, you don't get anyone, even non-Christians, saying that Jesus didn't exist until the 18th century. So Dixon goes on to say, as someone who teaches the historical Jesus in a major university, it seems to me that the new wave of mythicist scholarship, because he was going after these atheists who were saying that there's a wave of mythicist scholars, of scholars embracing the view that Jesus did not exist. He says it isn't even a ripple. I will, of course, reference Carrier's book in next year's course. He is the exception that proves the rule. To repeat a challenge I put out on social media several times before, I will eat a page of my Bible if someone can find me just one full professor of ancient history, classics, or New Testament in an accredited university somewhere in the world. There are thousands of names to choose from. Who thinks Jesus never lived? I don't deny that there are substantial questions that could be raised about the Christian faith, but the historical reality of Jesus of Nazareth isn't one of them. And so this article was written about 6 years ago, and I don't think it's changed. I'm not aware of anyone. I know people like Price and Carrier who have PhDs in the relevant fields, but none that teach. Now, Dixon is saying teaching at any university. He adds accredited university. Price, I think, teaches at a seminary, but I don't know if it's accredited or not. I put in a major university. I know it's a bit fuzzier of a category. I guess you could maybe pick accredited versus unaccredited, because there's lots of diploma mills out there. You know what's scary, actually, when you go and pick a university? There are diploma mills, places that are not accredited, that are just set up in a store above, you know, in a window above a department store, you know, a little office. Like, this is our university. If you just send in, you know, 100 pages of work you did, we'll give you a doctorate. You know, you got these fake universities out there to watch out for. There are accreditation mills. So there are diploma mills, fake universities giving fake diplomas, and then accreditation mills. So fake organizations that accredit fake universities that put forward fake diplomas. As someone who desperately wants to get a PhD, I mean, not desperately, I'm open to it. I have 3 master's degrees, but getting a PhD would be awesome. Maybe when I'm in Dallas, there might be talks of partnership with the University of Dallas. Hopefully I could adjunct there in the same way I adjunct at Holy Apostles College, and maybe in the process get a PhD. You never know. Dr. Horn, I think a long time ago when I was getting URLs, like, you know, I have TrentHorn.com. You know, actually, the reason I got TrentHorn.com, I got that like 15 years ago because a friend of mine, a critic of his, he was doing apologetics, and a critic bought his domain name, like John Smith. His name's not John Smith, but for the example, they bought his domain name, johnsmith.com, and held on to it. So that very day, I said, I'm not going to let someone do that to me. And I went out and bought trentonhorn.com and trenthorn.com. I think I also bought, I think, drhorn.com, but then I let that go because I realized I wasn't going to get a PhD for a very long time. But in any case, that's Dixon's argument. And I think it still holds true today that this is a fringe view among a few PhDs, but it has a lot of traction. And if you know people who purvey the internet a lot, they could be sucked into this. So what are the kind of arguments that these individuals put forward to say that Jesus never existed? Some of them are really shallow. They'll just say, if you can't prove Jesus existed outside of the Bible, I don't believe it. They take this view of the Bible and say, oh, the Bible is a religious text? Well, then it's 100% wrong. If you can't prove something outside of it, I won't believe it. Well, the Bible is an ancient text. Like for me, during my conversion experience to Christianity, I took the Bible and I said, look, some of it might be true, some of it might be false. What are the truths I can glean from it? At the bare minimum, I gleaned that Jesus existed, was crucified, and that his resurrection best explained the historical facts related to the origin of Christianity. But some of these atheists will look at this and say, you can't prove it outside of the Bible, I won't believe it. And I would ask them, well, why don't you believe what the Bible says, that there was a Jerusalem, there was a Pontius Pilate, there was a John the Baptist, there was a Jesus? Why not at least believe those details? And some of them will say, well, because it's just a bunch of miracles that are in there. It's a bunch of miracles and propaganda, so it's not reliable. And I'll say, okay, how do you know anything about the ancient world? What is your source? How do we know what life was like and historical events took place in the time of Jesus? And really, we only have two sources to that. Well, we have a few more, but the two major sources would be the Roman historian Tacitus and the Jewish historian Josephus. And they also describe miracles. They describe omens. They describe miraculous events taking place. But people don't reject them. And what's interesting here is they almost treat them as sometimes being infallible. So where the Bible disagrees, if the Bible records something and Josephus doesn't, people will say, oh, well, the Bible got it wrong. They'll never entertain the view, maybe Josephus just got it wrong, or he forgot or didn't record that event or didn't have access to the information. In AD 41, Emperor Claudius expelled all of the Jews from the city of Rome, not recorded in Tacitus, not recorded in Josephus, only in Acts chapter 18 and the Roman historian Suetonius. Pope Leo XIII, at the end of the 19th century, he said this. He said, there are people who will not believe biblical history, but profane history, not like profanities, but secular. Profane history, they will believe without a doubt, is essentially what he said. And in fact, these ancient historians do mention Jesus. Tacitus talks about how Christians are named after Christus, who was crucified under Pontius Pilate. And Josephus mentions Jesus in two places. He talks about how James, a brother of Jesus, was stoned to death. And that's a passage virtually all scholars agree is not an interpolation or a forgery. There's another passage called the Testimonium Flavianum, which is a longer section in Book 18 of a work of Josephus called The Antiquities of the Jews. The Antiquities is kind of a Jewish history from Adam to the present day that Josephus wrote. And in Book 18, he talks in the section on Pontius Pilate, he goes on a little discursus about Jesus. Now, this one's clearly been altered by Christian scribes because it has things like, he was the Christ. He appeared alive again on the third day. So some atheists will say, oh, it's clearly a forgery. But the problem is there's other parts of Josephus that are not something a Christian would forge. For example, it says that Jesus was a wise man. Christians did not refer to Jesus as a wise man or as merely a man. At the end of the passage, Josephus says, until this very day, the tribe of Christians named after him, Jesus, has not died out. But early Christians distanced themselves from other Jews who rejected the Messiah, so they didn't refer to themselves as a tribe. So that's why scholars like James Dunn have reconstructed the passage in Josephus to say at the end of the first century, this is what the Jewish historian Josephus probably wrote about Jesus. At this time, there appeared Jesus, a wise man, for he was a doer of startling deeds, a teacher of people who received the truth with pleasure. And he gained a following both among many Jews and among many of Greek origin. And when Pilate, because of an accusation made by the leading men among us, condemned him to the cross, those who had loved him previously did not cease to do so. And up until this very day, the tribe of Christians, named after him, has not died out. Now, some people still claim that this is a forgery, but I've gone through the passage and looked at different phrases that are in here. And I've done my own search of the Antiquities to show that most of the phrases here within this passage match typical phrases that Josephus uses in the Antiquities. Now, some atheists will say, ah, but it was a clever forger. It was someone who was really good at sounding like Josephus and then wrote this in here to fool us. And I would say, but here's the problem with the clever forger hypothesis. It's not falsifiable. How could I show that you're wrong, that you're saying this was forged by someone to look exactly like Josephus's writings, but it's not. So the evidence there doesn't bear out. But what some mythicists will say is fine. Even if Josephus and Tacitus mention this, why don't all the other historians mention this? You got someone who fed 5,000 people with loaves of bread. Hey, I promised on Monday I'd talk about this. I didn't get in this on Catholic Answers Live. Why didn't you have every ancient historian in the world talking about this? Well, here's the problem. Outside of Judea, when people would hear, if you were an ancient historian and you heard stories about Jesus of Nazareth performing miracles. I mean, I would ask you today, if you heard stories about Joseph Smith, the Mormon prophet, performing a miracle, or Muhammad performing a miracle, or other figures in other religions. But you're a Christian. You don't believe in those things. Let's say you're a historian. You would probably write it off as some legend, some fanciful tale. And we would expect other ancient historians to do this as well. We wouldn't expect them to write about a traveling rabbi in some backwater part of the Roman province. But here's the two other problems with this view. These other ancient historians, nearly all of them didn't even write about history. One of them was the ancient Roman author Columnella. He just wrote about trees in the Roman Empire. A lot of them wrote about mathematics, about rhetoric. Nearly all of them didn't write about history anyway. So even if they thought about writing about these fanciful tales, why would they? It wasn't within their genre. So you'll find these lists. Remsburg is the first one who did it at the early part of the 20th century, of all these people who should have mentioned Jesus, and they didn't. In fact, I did a debate back in 2012 with a guy named Jim Travis. It was my very first solo debate on the existence of God. And when we talked about the resurrection, Travis said that Jesus never existed. He said, there's many historians who would have believed that that would have written about Jesus, but they didn't. And I asked him in the debate, Travis, which historians? Many historians. And he couldn't name them because these ancient authors had no reason to, really. And finally, if this is your argument that Jesus never existed, the vast majority of these ancient authors, people like Appian, people like Juvenal, the Roman satirist, there's lists of dozens and dozens of them. They don't even write about Christians. They don't even write about Christians, this growing movement in the Roman Empire. So if they don't, so by that logic, were there no Christians in the first and second century of Rome? These ancient authors didn't even write about Christians. Why would we expect them to write about Christ? And the fact of the matter is, there could have been other writings about Jesus, but 99% of ancient literature has not survived to the present day. We barely have any evidence for Pontius Pilate. We have more evidence for Pilate than we do for Jesus because Pilate was the governor of an entire province. But the evidence we have for Jesus is on par with the evidence we have for other traveling rabbis and sages and people of his time. But even the evidence for Pilate is not very good. We don't have any of Pilate's writings. We don't have any of Pontius Pilate's orders. We didn't have any archaeological evidence for Pontius Pilate until 1961, when a stone was unearthed in Caesarea Maritima in Israel that's called the Pilate Stone that has a reference to Pontius Pilate. But we had no archaeological evidence before the 1960s. We didn't have any other Roman documents corroborating Pontius Pilate, except for one reference in Tacitus, which talks about, you guessed it, Christ being crucified under Pontius Pilate. In fact, the passage, it says, Christus, the founder of the name, was put to death by Pontius Pilate, procurator of Judea in the reign of Emperor Tiberius. I love what F.F. Bruce, who's a Protestant biblical scholar, says about this. It may be regarded as an instance of the irony of history that the only surviving reference to Pontius Pilate in a pagan writer mentions him because of the sentence of death which he passed on Christ. If you'd like more resources on how to rebut mythicism, I cover it in several chapters in my book, Counterfeit Christs. Bart Ehrman's book, Did Jesus Exist, is a decent introduction to mythicism, though, of course, I don't agree with Ehrman's thesis, his other things he puts in the book, saying that Jesus wasn't God or that the Gospels are anonymous. But if you want an agnostic take on being critical of mythicism, Ehrman's book is good. I'll have other resources at trendhornpodcast.com. But if you want my take on mythicism, I would recommend my book, Counterfeit Christ. You guys have been awesome. Looking forward to Free for All Friday tomorrow. Pray for us as we begin our journey across the country to Texas. You all have been great, and I hope you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.